Welcome to Midday, everybody. I'm Sheila Cass. Thanks for joining us. When you clean out your fridge, do you find yourself tossing produce and meat that you just never got around to cooking? How about perfectly good leftovers that you just aren't interested in anymore? Studies show that somewhere between 31 and 40% of the American food supply ends up in the trash. The United States Department of Agriculture estimates that over 100 billion pounds of food goes uneaten at a cost of more than $150 billion. We're not just talking about food from your fridge, freezer, or pantry. Think about all the prepared food that restaurants never serve, or the baked goods just a few days old that grocery stores can no longer sell. With us today to talk about the scope of food waste in America and what we can do about it is Ronnie Neff, Director of the Food System Sustainability and Public Health Program at Johns Hopkins Center for a Livable Future. She's an assistant professor at the Bloomberg School of Public Health. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. I'm really happy to be here.
I'm really glad you are here. So we know that 14% of American households struggle with food insecurity, and yet the amount of food that's going to waste is staggering. Why aren't we doing a better job of redirecting food to people who need it?
There's a number of reasons, but first, it's challenging. And second, I think we're really ramping up efforts. We're in the process right now of everybody's kind of suddenly tuning into this. I mean, if people have been working on food insecurity and redirecting food for years and years and years, but there's suddenly this new awareness of the issue and of the problem. And so there's all these new efforts and activities going on to try and do a better job.
New awareness, why?
I think it's one of those issues that's just like its time has come. And as those numbers get out there, people are so shocked by it and appalled when they think of the level of food insecurity, that is really motivating this kind of whirlwind of energy and new ideas.
So I cut you off. You were about to talk about some of the stuff that's happening.
Oh, well, I was going to you were asking me initially about the challenges, and I was going to say that the biggest challenge is that you have food that often is quite perishable, and you've got to get it from wherever it is to wherever someone is that needs it before it decays in the right time, in the right quantities that somebody can use it. And that's a logistical challenge that that people are working on with you know, all kinds of new computer technologies and investments in infrastructure and logistics and things like that. And just really focusing on it is making things happen as well.
So I think I may have a theory about why computers help, but you just said computer technologies can mm-hmm. help solve this distribution problem. How so?
By helping, it's apps, it's helping link up where the food is with where someone can use it. And so helping people to connect those dots is the biggest thing.
Is it inevitable in the kind of food system that middle and upper class people in the United States have gotten used to, which is to say strawberries all year round? We have a national, we expect produce which doesn't grow in our own backyard in the winter to be grown someplace else and gotten to it. Is it inevitable that there will be a lot of waste in a system like that?
That's a great question. And to some extent, there's definitely an inevitable level of waste, but the amount of waste that's happening right now is way above that. Like in the 1970s, we wasted half of what we currently waste. And we were still eating strawberries in the winter back then.
So why has it gotten so much worse?
I think there's a lot of reasons. One of them is the extent to which we are getting food, not seeing the kind of true value of some of the food. So it's easy to throw it out is one part of it. And kind of our culture has shifted. We cook less.
We eat out more.
Eat out more.
Or not mm-hmm. eat out, but buy out. We mm-hmm. we bring home carry out. Mm-hmm. Why are we more comfortable wasting carry out than food that we had bought expecting to cook at home?
It's not necessarily the case in my house. The carry out often, you know, goes out before anything else. But I don't know. I mean, I think that it's just to the extent that there's leftovers, some people like to eat the food that was just prepared right at that moment.
Okay. You said something a minute ago. I can't quite quote the phrase, but it implied to me that we don't put enough value on food. It, it's Is this something cultural, like too many of us are too many generations away from the farm, so we don't think of the labor that goes into it? Or is it just that food in the United States budget, household budget, is relatively cheap compared to, say, energy?
Absolutely. Both of those things are true. And that is not at all to discount the fact that so many people are really struggling to afford that food, because that is going on at the exact same time. But the food that we have has become less valuable to us.
That is Ronnie Neff here on Midday on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast. Ronnie Neff is director of the Food System Sustainability and Public Health Program at the Johns Hopkins Center for a Livable Future. What are your ideas on this topic? Do you find yourself throwing away a significant amount of food each week? Is it produce that went bad, meat that didn't make it to the dinner table or to the freezer in time? What are your thoughts about it? Does it bother you, or do you think, it doesn't really cost that much? I'm okay with this. You can give us a call at 410-662-8780, or you can email midday@wypr.org. In the United States, where in the food chain does the waste occur?
It happens at the end of the food chain. It happens by consumers, and it happens by businesses that are serving consumers the most. So one recent analysis, for example, found that about 40% was happening by retail and restaurants, and 43% was happening by consumers. Now, it's happening all along the food chain, from where it gets produced through distribution, through processing, and then through these parts at the end of the food chain. But that's where it's really concentrated, is with us.
So what does that tell us about how to capture the value of that food, the fact that it's happening near the end of the food chain?
I'm not sure I understand the question.
Well, it sounds as if it's not a matter of creating ways for farmers to save food, because they're being, from that little piece of information, I would assume there's not much waste in the production of food. The waste comes later, those of us who buy it, or restaurants who buy and prepare and try to guess how much is going to be eaten. And so I'm just curious as to whether that makes it easier then to come up with answers for how to keep it from being wasted, whether it's easier because we know where it's happening.
I think I don't want to say that it's only the consumers. I think that the volume is the biggest there, but there's a need for interventions at every stage of the food chain. And so there's I think that having a specific target, absolutely, though, can help make it easier to come up with solutions. And there are a lot of great ideas and promising things that are going on.
I know you've looked particularly at seafood. A lot of seafood goes to waste in the U.S. Tell us about that.
Yeah, we did a study looking at seafood, and we found that across the whole food chain, 47% of the seafood supply was going to waste. I mean, it's almost half. It's almost unbelievable. And the biggest part of that was coming through consumers. Now, with seafood, another significant area is something called bycatch that we don't hear a lot about, but it's basically, you sometimes hear, like, when you buy some tuna and it says dolphin-free tuna, it's when the fishing boats are picking up other species of fish and then just basically throwing them overboard. And so that's also a big source of waste when it comes to seafood.
So it's called bycatch when commercial fishermen catch something that's not what they were intending to catch.
Exactly.
And they don't keep it.
Right.
And do they throw it back living, or is it basically waste that they're throwing into the ocean, or does that vary?
It's basically waste. I mean, some of them may be living, but I assume that many of them are dead by the time that they get harvested out of the nets. But so, I'm not sure exactly.
Well, what I'm curious about is whether there is anything on the horizon to make use of that seafood if it can't still live, if it's past that. Is there some way to keep bycatch from being such a big amount of seafood?
Yeah, there are programs that are starting up in various places to take some of that seafood and find ways to use it. Part of the challenge is if you have a boat and you've got your whole setup geared towards one type of fish, and then you have another type of fish that's come in, you just may not be set up and equipped to deal with that kind of fish. So it requires somebody really doing some advanced planning and developing some infrastructure to deal with the other kind of fish.
So bycatch is part of the problem with seafood. What else?
I think the biggest thing is the fact that it's so perishable, and also that it has an odor, often when it's not actually gone bad. But we as consumers are very sensitive to those odors, and we think that you know, if we can detect the smell practically, that means it's bad and it's possibly dangerous and we'll throw it out. And so I think that's where a lot of the problem is happening. Now, seafood can be frozen, and that's a great way to preserve the seafood for much longer, and also to buy seafood when it's frozen rather than buying it in the so-called fresh state, which often has been frozen and then defrosted. But
right, and sometimes, I mean, I have seen that on the label, but somehow there's a cachet about fresh seafood that frozen fish doesn't carry.
I think that's true about a lot of the reasons. A lot of the food that we throw away is we have these ideas about what's fresh and the cachet about fresh. And maybe we really need to rethink that and put a cachet on the idea of being efficient and, you know, economical, and realizing that if you bought that fish frozen, it's going to stay fresher longer. And so it might even taste better.
Besides seafood, what other types of food account for most of the waste?
The biggest portion is in the fruits and vegetables, if you combine those two categories. That's the highest. Dairy and grain. And then, if you look at it by values, we don't waste as much like meat or fish, but the value of that is... those are high-value products, so by value, those would be at the top
of
the list.
So even if the volume's not big, it's costing a lot.
Exactly.
Lots of people want to be part of this conversation. Let's go to Barbara in Baltimore. Barbara, welcome to Midday.
Hi.
Hi.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we hear you.
Oh, good. I'm calling because I am so conscious about food waste, and we actually had a foreign exchange student live with us when I was growing up for a while. And she was so stunned by food waste of ours in the 60s, which was fairly minimal. And so I've always been very conscious about it. And I do buy good quality frozen foods, and I simply don't waste. I buy a minimum quantity of everything that is fresh, and I don't eat anything with preservatives. So it is possible to do it without preservatives. And I just think it's about planning, and I hope people hear this show today and will be more conscious about how they're managing food.
Barbara, I appreciate the phone call. Ronnie, Barbara says it's about planning. Does that seem to you to be good advice?
Absolutely.
That is sort of the key point here?
Yeah, it's a great comment, Barbara. I think that is one of the key things is planning in advance. And they find that if you go into the store, for example, with a shopping list, you're much more likely to stick to it. And if you figure out in advance when you're making your shopping list, what meals are we going to have this week? And, well, how many people are going to be there? And really actually, you know, plot that out. What's already in the cupboard, you know, just figuring out those things in advance, you'll go a long way towards preventing having food you'd never really needed in the first place.
Barbara, thanks for the call. We need to take a quick break here. When we come back, more about food waste in America and what we can do to redirect food that's still good to eat. You can join the conversation. Call us at 410-662-8780 or send us an email at midday@wypr.org. I'm Sheila Cass. Stay with us. Welcome back to Midday, everybody. I'm Sheila Cast. More than 100 billion pounds of food goes to waste in America each year. While some of that food may truly have gone bad, other food is thrown away simply because of how it looks or due to misplaced quality or safety concerns. With me in Studio A is food waste researcher Ronnie Neff. Ronnie Neff is director of the Food System Sustainability and Public Health Program at Johns Hopkins Center for a Livable Future. So, Ronnie, how do we redirect food and connect it to people who need it?
There's a lot of different ways. And it depends where we're talking about in the food chain. But for example, one of the things that's been talked about a lot is giving farmers incentives, tax incentives for crop donation. So and it's not just money, but there's other way things that we can do to help make it easier for those who could be in a position to donate. We can provide them with trucks that could go around to all the different local farms and collect that and aggregate it. You know, give them help with getting it harvested and to the place where it needs to go. Some farmers, for example, don't know where to send it. They may have excess food and they don't know exactly where to go. So it's helping with all of those pieces can make a big difference.
Let me pull Beth Martino into the conversation. Beth Martino is president of the Maryland Food Bank. The Maryland Food Bank has worked for 35 years to distribute food to individuals and families in need. And Beth is with us today to talk about the food bank's efforts to prevent fresh food from being discarded. Beth, welcome to Midday.
Thanks. I'm glad to be here.
I'm glad you're with us. What does the Maryland Food Bank do to prevent food waste?
Well, two of the main ways that we help with preventing food waste are through working with at the kind of the beginning of the food chain, which you all have talked quite a bit about already, with farmers. That's the first way. We partner with farms across the state of Maryland. We currently work with nearly 70 farms to go and glean produce from their farmland that for one reason or another is not something they're going to be able to sell. So we send out teams of volunteers that go and work in those fields, and then we are able to bring that produce back to the food bank and distribute it out through the various food pantries and soup kitchens and organizations that we work with across the state. So last year we were able to distribute nearly 10 million pounds of produce across the state. So that is largely produce that would have gone to waste otherwise. The second thing that we do is to work a little bit further down the chain with supermarkets and wholesalers. Specifically, when it comes to supermarkets, we have relationships with nearly 300 stores across Maryland, and either the food bank ourselves or an organization that we work with, you know, a local food pantry or operation, will go to those stores and pick up food that may be thrown out for some reason. A lot of that is fresh and frozen meat, bakery items, things that have, you know, a quick turnaround and will spoil. And last year we also distributed nearly 10 million pounds of food from that effort. So, you know, collectively we're nearly saving 20 million pounds of food through those two efforts alone.
And as I'm listening to you, you didn't mention prepared foods. Does the food bank try to collect prepared foods, like from restaurants?
We do. It's a smaller part of what we do, and you know, we are here at the food bank largely a high volume operation. So, mm-hmm. You know, one of the things we do, a really good example that stands out in my mind, is, you know, we have great relationships with both of the professional sports stadiums in Baltimore. So, after game day, when there is food left over that hasn't been prepared, we're able to go there and pick that up. But if we do have a restaurant or someone locally that wants to donate, we are always ready to connect them with a partner that's in their area. So there, you know, almost every community has a church or a school or some other kind of organization that runs a small food pantry. And so if a local restaurant wants to try to donate, we will help to make that connection. But, you know, nearly 20% of the food waste globally, you know, there was an article in National Geographic just earlier this year that cited about 20% of the food waste happens kind of at the farm stage, you know, that initial stage, whereas another 20% happens at the far other end in households. So we're really trying to, you know, come in a little bit earlier in that process and kind of capture largely what's happening in the farms, what's happening in supermarkets, because we're probably not as capable of working, you know, in those smaller arrangements with a restaurant or in the prepared food area.
Ronnie Neff, do you have a sense of whether what Beth Martino is describing about the Maryland Food Bank doing, is that happening with a lot of food banks across the country? I mean, are those steps being taken pretty widespread?
Yeah, and the Maryland Food Bank does fantastic work in this area. And they're part of a growing movement of food banks that are looking to get healthier food to their clients. And a lot of that also it means finding ways to get that food from the farm. And so, yeah, so it's a movement, I'd say.
Beth Martino, what kind of infrastructure and resources does it take to do this collection that you've been describing to us?
Right. Well, you know, that is a really good point, because you have to have storage space. You know, even something as simple as going to pick up at your local grocery store the meat and bakery products that they might have to throw away. You know, you have to have a vehicle that can transport those things. You need to have adequate dry storage and cold storage. And so that can be one of the barriers to getting something like this up and running. From the food bank's perspective, we have tried to start stepping in and helping local organizations who want to participate in this kind of a program by helping them to buy a refrigerator or invest in coolers and insulated blankets so that they can transport from those locations, because that is probably the single biggest barrier is building that infrastructure that would allow an organization to be able to step in and prevent food from going to waste.
That is Beth Martino, president of the Maryland Food Bank, here on Midday on WYPR. I'm Sheila Cast. Here with me in the studio is Ronnie Neff of the Center for a Livable Future, part of the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. We're talking about food waste in the United States and what can be done about it. And I'd be curious to hear from either of you. I mean, I'm sure ultimately this is a decision that is made case by case with a sharp pencil about what the costs are. But the capital investment in the trucks and the storage facilities and the operating investment in electricity to keep things refrigerated, at what point, I mean, how do you, Beth, let me throw it at you, how do you figure out if it is, if the food you can save is worth that kind of investment?
Well, you know, we operate here at the food bank with the belief that we're never going to turn away donated food. But, you know, I think you're raising an excellent point, because when folks come to the food bank and want to get involved with this work, one of the things people often don't think about is the capital investment or even just the regular operating investment. You know, the majority of our food that we distribute is donated, but there's a significant cost to redistributing that food. You know, there are folks that have to be involved with food handling and food safety and warehousing expenses that go along with that. The transportation cost, you know, the Maryland Food Bank serves organizations from the Eastern Shore to the western border of Maryland. So shipping food from, you know, a farm maybe in Baltimore County or on the Eastern Shore all the way to Cumberland, we incur significant costs for that. So that is definitely something that, you know, from our perspective is supported by very generous philanthropic partners. And for smaller organizations, that's the same struggle, you know, that you can maybe able to find ways to rescue food that would otherwise go to a landfill, but then there is a cost to getting that back out into the community.
Let me remind listeners, you can be part of this conversation if you have an idea about how to manage this or just a lament about how much food you waste. You can call us at 410-662-8780 or send us an email at midday@wypr.org. Ronnie Neff, what about that? How should we think of the trade-off between the food saved and the cost of saving it?
I think that it is a trade-off, and that each entity that would be donating has to think about that. One of the things that we've found through some interviews that we've done is that for some, and this may be more for smaller donators, although not necessarily, that other reasons beyond the cost, that they are donating for reasons beyond the fact that they might, you know, it might cost them money. So that for them, they might like something like recognition. If they could get recognition that said that they were donating, then that can build their business in other ways and sort of in some ways recoup the cost in a completely different way. So things like that, and just many of them were doing it because they know that it's the right thing to do.
We had a caller who couldn't stay with us who wanted to point out, and I can't vouch for the accuracy of this, but she says fast food restaurants that at the end of the day don't cut their prices so that they could move more food. She thinks that's not a good attitude. She thinks that restaurants should try to reduce prices and get food out the door that way. Any thoughts about that, Ronnie Neff?
I think it's interesting. I mean, I guess I personally wouldn't put a moral, like, you should do this, but it's great if they can. I think, you know, each one is making the decisions based on their own business.
Their own business model, right. Beth Martino, I would think some groceries and perhaps retailers would have concerns about donating food that is not very fresh. Is that a well-founded concern? And do you think it's changing?
I mean, I definitely think that, you know, if there had been a concern about that in the past, that it seems to be minimized as far as what we experience. You know, in early 2000s, and then all the way even up into 2010, 11, and 12, the food bank didn't have a really large program to partner with retail and grocery stores. And, you know, today we have more than 300 stores that we work with, and so we're working with really all of the major grocery chains that operate in Maryland. And that comes from work that's been done, you know, at the national level by Feeding America, but working with those corporate entities. So I think that tells me that they are more comfortable with it. You know, obviously, for any organization, whether it's a retail store or a restaurant or whomever it may be, you know, it's important to work with an organization that you've done your due diligence on. You want to make sure that they're going to be able to follow food safety protocols. You know, here at the food bank, we have some of the highest food safety sort of certifications and protocols in place that can be attained. And you want to check and make sure, you know, you don't want someone picking food up and driving several hours with something that needs to be refrigerated, you know, just thrown in the back of their trunk. So those are the kinds of things that you just want to make sure you feel comfortable that they understand, you know, food safety procedures and things along those lines. But it's not something that we are hearing a lot about from our partners at this point.
Evan Lutz has called us from Hungry Harvest in Baltimore. Evan Lutz, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me on.
What is Hungry Harvest?
So we're a produce delivery service, and our mission is to reduce food waste and feed hungry families. So we work with local farms and wholesalers to recover their surplus produce.
I'm sorry,
but normally we get thrown away.
Evan, I didn't hear that. Evan, I didn't hear what you said. You said you work with local farmers to cover what?
To recover their surplus produce.
Surplus, okay.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And that's produce that's perfectly fine to eat, but normally would get thrown away because of its odd size or shape or because of logistical inefficiencies in the supply chain.
And so when you recover this produce, it goes where?
So we box it up into really nice variety boxes and then deliver it to our subscribers once a week for a discounted price. And for every box we deliver to a subscriber, we also donate 3 to 5 pounds of produce to people in need around the area.
Okay, thank you for explaining that, Ronnie.
I'm a subscriber, and I just want to say that every week I'm kind of amazed when I get my box because it looks like food you could have gotten in the supermarket. For the most part, it doesn't even look damaged.
Evan, how do you find subscribers?
Exactly. Yeah, we find many through Facebook. You can find us on Facebook at @HungryHarvest and on Twitter, and we have a lot of friend referrals. Our program is really popular when people can cook together and share recipes and share, you know, pictures of their ugly produce with their friends and their family. And our program really just has a viral component. When one person signs up, they're so amazed at the ugly produce or quote-unquote ugly produce that they get in their boxes that they just have to tell their friends. It's really an awesome thing to be a part of.
Evan, I appreciate you telling us about the ugly produce. Beth Martino, do you hear about other programs like this? Are there other ways, in addition to the out-and-out donations to the Maryland Food Bank, that you find are getting food to people who need it?
You know, I mean, there are obviously a lot of different types of organizations. The bulk of what we work with is really, you know, the Charitable Food Network. And I think what Evan is describing is an interesting, you know, model that he has developed where, as opposed to his central customer being, you know, folks who may not be able to fill their, you know, he's serving a more of a consumer-driven, a consumer base, whereas we're looking more at the partners we work with can't charge for anything that we give them. But I think that's a really interesting model because you do have people, as Ronnie said, who, you know, they're going to be perfectly happy to buy that produce. And it sort of goes to a bigger question of, you know, the grading system for produce.
Yes.
And how that is affecting food waste, because simply, you know, this kind of movement toward apples have to be, you know, shiny and round, and all the produce has to look, you know, television ready, means that there's a lot of things that may go to waste. And there's certainly a market in the charitable community for it, but there may be a consumer market for it as well. And, you know, so I think Evan's tapping into an interesting component of the market there.
Right. And Evan said that they also give produce in proportion to what they sell. Ronnie, do you want to jump in?
I really think this is a key piece of some of what's going on in terms of waste, is this idea that our food has to look a certain way. And it's also contributing to our throwing away food that we already have, because it may be, the quality may have declined visually a little bit, even if it still tastes perfectly fine. So it's happening in our homes, and a tremendous amount of food is being thrown away on our behalf without our ever even getting to see it and make that decision. So when people say, oh, you should eat more ugly produce, well, if you go to the store, you don't find that ugly produce because they've decided that for us.
Right.
So that's kind of sort of how the produce grading standards are a little messed up.
We need to take another quick break here. And when we get back, I do want to talk about sell-by dates or best-by dates and what they really mean. Beth Martino of the Maryland Food Bank, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thanks again for having me. It's great.
Yeah, we really admire what you are doing. And listeners, I want to remind you, you can be part of this conversation. We have quite a few people who want to join in, and we're going to take these calls when we come back. We're taking calls at 410-662-8780 and emails at midday@wypr.org. I'm Sheila Cast. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Midday, everybody. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking about food waste. According to the United States Department of Agriculture, Americans let more than 140 trillion calories go to waste each year. That figure translates to an estimated 133 billion pounds of food at the retail and consumer levels. What steps can we take to prevent food from winding up in the landfill? I'm speaking with Ronnie Neff, director of the Food System Sustainability and Public Health Program at Johns Hopkins Center for a Livable Future. Join our conversation. Have you come up with any methods to reduce food waste, like meal planning, freezing food, making a list of what's in your fridge? What has worked for you? Give us a call at 410-662-8780 or send us an email at midday@wypr.org. Before we run out of time, I do want to ask you, Ronnie Neff, about sell-by dates, best-by dates, freshest-by dates. I have the impression that a lot of people take them very, very literally as a measure of food safety.
Yes.
And that really isn't what they're about.
Yes. So in some of our survey work, for example, one national consumer survey I did found that 91% of people notice these date labels. And then another national consumer survey found that over a third of Americans always throw out food on or before the date label, and 84% at least occasionally do. And the reason that that's pretty shocking is that those labels don't really have anything to do with safety. So in the United States, the date labels are only about possibly quality. There's no regulation, no federal regulation. Some states have regulations. And the sell-by date in particular is there for a store to know when to take a product off the shelf when the quality may decline somewhat, but it's not anything to do with safety. And really what those should be, they should be encoded so that consumers can't even read them, because they're not messages for consumers. And there's a long lag after that sell-by date when the food is still perfectly good.
Okay, but just from a standpoint of food waste, if the store is going to use the, whatever that date is called, freshest by, if the store is going to use that as the date to take it off the shelf, it's still going to end up wasted food, right? Whether I've already taken possession of it and I'm considering it wasted in my kitchen, or the store manager is considering it wasted, it's still part of the problem, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, the real problem is looking at those dates and how they're created and what dates are on there. So there's national legislation right now in Congress. I think it's called the Food Date Labeling Act, that would basically say we have a standard quality label on foods if they want to put it on there, and it's the same label, so everybody knows what that is. And there is a safety label that would be on selected foods where there is an issue. It's a very small number of foods where there could be a safety risk. And that's it. And that's all that there is. And if you have a sell-by date that is, again, encoded, it would also say that that food could still be sold, and it could be, I think it said it could still be sold, but I know it says it can be still used after that date.
Kitty has called us. I'm not sure from where. Kitty, welcome to Midday.
Thank you.
Your question?
Yeah, I'm just interested in if there's been any regulation talk about permitting dumpster diving. I know that it's still illegal, and I don't think there's any taxing or restrictions on grocery stores that throw away the amount of food, but I've been dumpster diving, and sometimes those dumpsters are cleaner than the shelves that I put my food on. So, and a lot of those things are in there before their sell-by dates are even out. So I'm just curious what your thoughts are on that.
Kitty, interesting question. Thanks for the call.
Yeah, dumpster diving is fascinating. I was actually part of a group that was doing a qualitative study with dumpster divers. Had a very, even though it's a practice that you hear a lot about, we had quite a hard time finding people that were doing it. But to my knowledge, there are no regulations stopping it. And so, you know, if that's a way to recover food, you know, whatever it takes, that, you know, to keep that food in circulation rather than having it go bad.
I mean, I guess the concern would be whether you're on private, whether you're on property that you're not allowed to be on, or at least that would be concern. But just sheer dumpster diving in and of itself, you don't know of any regulations against it.
Yeah, that part is in my area, so I don't know.
James has called us from Baltimore. James, welcome to Midday.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Uh-huh.
I work with Compost Cab here in Baltimore. We collect food scraps from residents and small offices. And we partner up with community gardens and other urban agriculture to turn that into healthy soil and grow vegetables. And so we're working kind of further down the food chain. But I'm just wondering if there's any thoughts on how composting can help reduce food waste and really connect that with food growing and the food system as a whole.
James, I appreciate the question. I'm also going to ask for Vinny's phone call, because I think Vinny is also involved with composting. Vinny, welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, how are you?
Can you hear me?
Yeah,
we
hear you.
Very good. Thanks for taking my call. My name is Vinny. I run Chesapeake Compost Works. We are where we process food waste into compost, into soil. We have a facility that we're building on the east side of the city right now. And my question specifically is, like, we've heard a lot about ugly produce or produce that might be of marginal quality, but there's a lot of organic waste material, like pineapple peelings or carrot tops or things like that, that are just not meant to be eaten. How can we, in the composting community, work with food recovery organizations like the Capital Area Food Bank or the Maryland Food Bank to try to separate what would be composted into something maybe that could be recovered for human consumption?
Vinny, thanks for the question. Could you hear Vinny? There was a lot of noise behind
him.
But so two questions about essentially how can composting businesses address these issues?
These are great questions, and I'm a big composter myself. I think it's really important. To address the first one, I think that there's a lot of opportunity. There's so much food that we're just throwing in the trash. And what composting can do to reduce waste is if we become more aware of that food that we're throwing away because we're doing something a little different with it, that might help us reduce less. Now, one thing from one of our national consumer surveys we did find was that about 41% of people who say they compost say that they don't worry about waste because they know they're going to compost it. So along with the composting, we have to put out a message that the first priority should be to not waste it in the first place. And then if it reaches that point, then at least compost it. In terms of connecting composting with a lot of these companies, I think it's, and nonprofits, I think it's really great. It's important. I think I'm probably not telling you something you don't know, but infrastructure would help, like having them have compost bins and just having those conversations and kind of making it happen. I'm guessing that they probably don't like throwing it in the trash either if they know there could be a use for it.
So Vinny, I think particularly ask how to do a better job of seeing whether food that's coming to his attention could be salvaged.
Oh, is that the question? Okay.
That's how I understood it. Vinny's not with us anymore.
Okay.
So.
I'm not sure. I mean, I guess I would have imagined that by the time a food is being given to a compost place,
It probably is passed.
It either may be passed or it may be in a box where it would be difficult. Like somebody would have to really take a lot of time to pick through that. But I don't actually know in what form they're getting it.
Nancy has called us from Reisterstown. Nancy, welcome to Midday.
Hi.
I
had a comment about grocery stores. I noticed this particularly at one of the bigger chains that they'll do it. Instead of doing a half price, they'll do a buy one, get one free. And in a lot of instances, it's something, a fruit that goes bad if you don't eat it quickly, if you're getting baskets of berries. And when I questioned that in the store, they said, oh, well, if that second basket goes bad, just bring it back and we'll refund half what you paid. And to me, that's just another way of wasting. The other thing is a lot of times the berries in the baskets, and I'm not talking about they don't look good. I'm talking about that they're already rotten, or in some cases already have the mold on them when you get them in the grocery store. I know stores work on profits of pennies, but I think they could actually help alleviate the problem with food shortage a lot more if they paid more attention to things like that.
Nancy, thank you for that comment. Let me add to it before I ask you to respond, Ronnie, an email we got from Pamela, who says, as an individual consumer, I waste a huge amount of food each month because of how food is packaged and sold. I think of it as the celery problem. I only need one stalk of celery and make a soup to serve a household of two, but I am usually forced to buy an entire bunch of celery because that's the only way it's sold, and the rest of the bunch rots in my fridge until I finally give up on the idea that I will find another recipe to use up that celery. The quantity in food packaging is part of the problem. What can an individual consumer do to find an alternative to throwing out food? Is there a place to donate perishable groceries rather than just canned or dry goods?
Great questions. So to take the most recent one first, I think in some of our surveys, that is, packaging is the number one thing that people want. And so finding ways to communicate that up the food chain to let those businesses know that, yeah, we want smaller packages and we want resealable packages. There's websites that will give you recipes, like if you know you have extra celery, that you can just put in, like, I have celery and this and that, and it'll give you some recipes that specifically use those ingredients. There in DC, they have this really innovative thing where they have a refrigerator and you can put the rest of your celery there and somebody will walk up to that refrigerator and take it out. It's like a community refrigerator. But I think it is difficult to give, like, you know, a half used celery to donate that. So it's a challenge.
And of course, Nancy's comment on the phone was that she thinks groceries are packaging two for one, sometimes just to sort of get you not to notice that it's already not usable.
Mm-hmm. It may be that, and it may also be that they're realizing that is on the brink and they want to move it as quickly as possible. And they're hoping that you'll buy it and see that it's getting pretty close and that you'll eat it fast. But it is a challenge. And so there are some innovative sales models, like instead of buy one, get one free, some places have like buy one, get one later. so that you know, you wouldn't have that problem. It's also a challenge when in buying in bulk in general. I mean, you know, some of the bulk stores where we think that we're actually saving money by buying something in huge quantity, but by the time we eat it, it's gone bad, even when it wasn't a particularly perishable food. We have to really be careful when we're shopping, not to get sucked into some of these things.
We have a couple of we have just a few minutes left, and a couple of callers who bring a perspective from a different culture. Shomo called us. Shomo, welcome to Midday.
Thank you. Thank you for taking my call. I really wanted to comment on the sense of individual responsibility and how instilling that responsibility begins from childhood. So I grew up in India, a typical upper middle class family, but growing up we were aware of the, you know, socioeconomic disparities around us, and we were brought up to respect the effort that goes into growing something and the journey that a grain of rice or a piece of vegetable has made from the farmer planting it to it reaching our plates. As kids, as young as 4 to 5 years old, wasting food on our plates was an absolute no-no. My dad would remind us to kind of respect the effort of the farmer, and later, you know, at a slightly older age, he would get into how each one of us, in our own small way, are contributing to food inflation by wasting food and thereby, in a very small way, contributing to the supply-demand mismatch. And this message kind of stays with me to this day and is part of my parenting message to my daughter, who is 10 years old now, and she does not take food on her plate that she does not think she can finish.
Shomo, I appreciate your call. Do you want to respond to Shomo?
No, I mean, he very eloquently stated this idea that we do each have a responsibility for it. And in some of our consumer surveys, we find that the number one motivation for people to reduce waste of food is saving money personally. But second, third, and fourth is all these ideas about setting an example for children, personal responsibility, guilt about waste, and those are really powerful.
We had a caller who wanted to know whether food that is getting older still has a good vitamin content.
There may be some declines in vitamins. I don't want to answer specifically, and it probably varies so much by food, but it's not really considered to be a major problem.
And Rob, responding to our conversation we had a minute ago, says when you only need one stalk of celery, he recommends going to the salad bar and buying the one stalk you need there. Ronnie Leff, I really want to thank you for spending this hour with us. Thank you so much.
It was great.
Ronnie Neff is director of the Food System Sustainability and Public Health Program at Johns Hopkins Center for a Livable Future. Also want to thank Beth Martino of the Maryland Food Bank, who spoke with us a few minutes ago. And I want to thank Joe Squared for providing lunch. Joe Squared serves coal-fired pizzas, risotto, and local craft beers. Locations and hours at joesquared.com. And thank you for listening. Tune in tomorrow. We'll discuss a new report calling for Maryland to reform its bail system. I'm Sheila Cast. Stay tuned now for Here and Now.
Midday is produced by Maureen Harvey and Andrea Appleton. The show is engineered by Luke Spicknall. Music produced by Jeff Truman and High Gravity Sounds. Midday podcasts and live streaming are available at WYPR.org or on demand using the WYPR app. This is WYPR, your NPR news station.